Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us so that we can grow our business in this wonderful niche of tech. My name is Gary Lafter, your host, creator and founder of Authority Accelerators, where we help people close more sales, drive more profits, and with all less competition by elevating tech leaders from their expert status to the authority status that they deserve. Now, on this episode, I am extremely thrilled and excited to have our guest, Bogdan, and we are going to be talking about how to stand out in an extremely crowded market, what works when it comes to building your cybersecurity business, and more importantly, what doesn't work and how to scale. We'll even, if we get time, talk about acquisitions and growth. So we've got an awful lot to fit in today. So without further ado, Bogdan, it's extremely great to have you here on this episode. Why don't we just start off very quickly by giving us a brief introduction of who you are, where you're from, and what is it that you do?
Okay, thank you for that amazing introduction. I am Bogdan, and I am from Bucharest, from Romania. And I've been in the IT space officially for 12 years, unofficially ever since I learned what a computer is. So like ever since high school, we used to hack games and stuff to have the upper hand. And that basically got us, like me and my friends and other people in my generation, got us into trying to figure out how these wonderful machines work, what makes them tick, and how we can get around random limitations that they might have. Right.
Yeah, that's a fact. And I can't wait to dive more into business in a little bit. But before we do, let's dial it back a little bit. You've had an amazing journey in the last few years, you know, and we're going to dissect some of that later on today. But why don't you tell us about what inspired you to start a cybersecurity business? And, you know, as you said, when you first started, you learned how to hack things and break into them. And now you're doing the complete opposite of doing cybersecurity. What was the main impetus for you? What was the main reason why you started in cybersecurity? And what was the initial problem you set out to solve?
So when we started this company, because it's me and three other guys, we started out with, each of us started out in this industry by hacking around and trying to solve real issues, right? And one of us had knowledge in the cybersecurity space, which led us to think of a solution which can basically automate the whole process of vulnerability management, which is what we do. Because what's the problem that we saw in the market is, if you look at any standard, like classic vulnerability management software, it's very boring. Like you hit some weird buttons and you have to do some technical gobbledygook. And at the end, you get an Excel, which you have to forward to some techie who knows what to do about it, right? And it's all very complicated, and you need like an army of people to do this. And if you are a smaller company or a medium-sized company, you might not have the resources to do that, right? And that's where we saw basically a gap in the market, which is, okay, what does most of the market need in terms of security? Well, you need to know what you are exposed to, like what servers, what computers are a risk for you. And you usually know that, right? It's your laptops, it's your website. If you have like a hosted service, it's your database, stuff like that. And then you need to know what is the biggest bang for your buck that you can do. And we felt that this is what standard like legacy software fails at, prioritizing and grouping up specific technical vulnerabilities in like an easy to understand, like, hey, if you upgrade, I don't know, this server, this software across all of your devices, then 60% of your security risk is taken care of. Like just making it easy to understand like that without too much technical jargon, right? And without too much manual intervention, because that's why we have computers, right? To help us out in avoiding manual and menial work.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. And I like what you said there about trying to keep it simple, trying to make it easy for people to understand and therefore execute, and try not to try not to use too much heavy jargon all the time, because when we're involved in the field, we tend to get very jargon orientated. But our buyers aren't necessarily looking for jargon. What they're looking for is a solution, the solution to the problem. And, you know, we're going to dive a little bit deeper in, you know, when we come to problem-facing business acumen. But before we get into that, you know, you're in cybersecurity. It's a very, very crowded market. It's a huge market. Although we all think what we do is unique to the outside world, it's just one great big niche and everybody relatively sounds the same until you have that conversation with somebody. What do you think makes your company stand out in such a crowded marketplace?
It's something that it's really hard to see with established cybersecurity names, which is flexibility. When you have a software product that has been in the market for, like, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, you already have an established client base and you just sell your product, right? You just, like, take it or leave it. What we offer is basically flexibility in terms of both software features that you can enable or disable at will, as well as stuff like billing and stuff like what kind of reports that you get, and just basically on the whole scanning process, like the whole process of you getting from, like, the login screen to, like, a prioritized list of, okay, what do I need to do to get the security stuff off my back? Because nobody, like, from a business perspective, thinks, okay, I have to do this securely because X. No, you usually think, okay, I have a milk factory, right? My job is to bottle up milk and to sell a ton of bottles of milk. The whole IT stuff and the whole security stuff is just secondary to my main business objective. So the more streamlined and the less hassle you can add to this process, the easier it is to have your clients be happy, right? If you allow them to just focus on what they actually want to do, which usually isn't security, that's, like, our job for them, because that's why they are our clients, right?
Yeah. And that's a really good point, you know, and because when you look at it, you're not coming in with a product-led or a service-led offering. What you're coming in with is almost like a holistic partnership approach. Let me partner with you so you can get on and do what you do best, and that's growing your milk bottling business or growing your construction business or whatever the case may be, and we'll take care of this back end and really helping them not just with their IT, but holistically helping them grow as a company, as a client. And that's a really good way of looking at it. And again, it sounds like common sense, doesn't it? But we all know that common sense is not necessarily common practice. So the fact that you walk your talk, you know, is a really good lesson there. So listen, you've been in business now, what, since 2015. You've had a really, really great success. You know, you moved, you broke through that first seven-figure barrier, you know, multi-seven figures, and then you got acquired by PDQ. What lessons have you learned in this really short space of time about growing a business in the tech field?
It's that everything changes. And, like, we'd say that, like, yeah, everything changes, of course. But in the tech field, there are so many moving targets that it can be pretty hard to, like, focus on what is actually important, right? And what we found out is, because we also try juggling too many balls at the same time, and you obviously break some stuff, but you can learn from that. And as long as you keep an open mind and just think, hey, we might have, like, did some stuff better here, or we might have to rethink something because our client got mad and maybe he, like, actually had a point. As long as you keep this flexibility and you don't, like, sit in your little box of, like, oh no, this is how you have to do X, Y, or Z, I feel like this is the most valuable thing that you can learn. And especially with the collaboration with PDQ, we've learned, like, a whole nother side of this market, right? A more, they focus a ton of effort on their customers. They are very social. They have, like, a Discord server. They have a Reddit subreddit where they post product updates and stuff like that. And when you get input directly from your client like that in a very public way, it helps a ton to already be in that flexibility mindset, right? Because you might, I don't know, some client might be angry because something didn't work. They might not word it as nicely as you'd want, but you can't hide behind the Zendesk ticket cover, right? Because it's all out in the open. And you have to understand that, hey, I might be in the wrong here. Like that client, if he's mad, more often than not, he's right. And you have to figure out what didn't work and how you can make it work better for him and other clients in the future.
Yeah, so it's just being really flexible where you can be, right? Is what you're saying. One of the lessons is be flexible. Focus on where you need to be, but also be flexible with it.
Yeah, and also always keep an open ear. Like you might think that you found the golden goose and like found the correct path to do everything and anything that you might ever want to do in your life. But then something might change in the market and you might have to shift your focus or you might have to explore other areas, right, of development. You'll always have to be, keep one eye open on everything else that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you've mentioned a couple of times now, Bogdan, about, you know, the importance of outcome-driven solutions over just technology, over just the product, over just the service, you know, and, you know, it's something which we've here at Authority Accelerators have been preaching for a long, long time now is make sure that whatever you're doing has an outcome attached to it. That outcome is solving someone's problem, find out what the problem is, then comes in the tech. So it's almost like a reverse engineering from that. How do you get to communicate that to your potential clients and your potential partners when everybody is sounding the same? When everybody's saying exactly the same thing, or at least perceived to be saying the same thing, how do you get that message across so that people start thinking they're different? They're coming from an outcome perspective rather than a process.
Well, when you talk about the outcome, you have to start about finding it, right? Because the outcome for me might be different from the outcome for you or from anyone else, right? So when you start discussing with a potential new customer or a client, you have to start by asking a ton of questions, basically. And instead of coming up with a solution right away, you have to let them speak and let them tell you what their problem is. They don't care if you sell them the most bleeding edge technology infused, I don't know, gobbledygook, which is like, it's gonna move a ton of bytes faster in nanoseconds via email and carrier pigeons or something. They don't care about that. They want their problem to be fixed. How you fix it, usually they don't care. Like, as long as you fix it, we are perfect. The tech stuff, like what front-end framework you use, what API service you use, what kind of relational database you use in the backend. Those are things for us tech people to worry about, right? To nerd out about what would be the best solution and when can you upgrade and stuff like that. Slack still uses PHP. If you ask any modern web developer, they're going to tell you PHP is ancient. Slack proves that it's not. As long as you solve a real issue, it's really good. And let's not even talk about stuff like COBOL, right? Which is still in use.
Exactly right. So I love what you said there. That is for us to nerd about. That is not for the client to nerd about. Yeah, this is what we do. This is the industry that we're in. So let's talk about business leadership. You know, that there are businesses within the tech company, in the tech industry out there, who on the face of it look like they're doing really well, but are really internally struggling. They're really struggling to get, you know, high profit levels. And that's because they're struggling to become a business leader in a sea full of experts. And a lot of founders really struggle from breaking free of that sea of sameness where they're just seen as just another expert. What insights can you share that you've taken to transition from just being another technical expert into a business leader?
You have to fight with your strengths, right? For example, we have always had the openness to, like as I said earlier, talk a lot with the client and offer up support in more real-time ways, apart from like the standard, like open a ticket, as well as try to always understand that the client's needs might change. If they ask for something today, that might not be the true 1 year from now, right? I think this helps you build out a niche. And when you find those clients that appreciate what you have to offer, because each of us are unique and each of us has certain strengths that they can use in business, you can find your niche, which appreciates your strength, your specific qualities and your specific differentiators. And then you can just double down on that. Once you have your first foot in the door, like your first client or your first 2, 3, 10 clients, then you can kind of sense the formula, what works for you, and just expand on that, right? And this also reflects in like internally when you need to expand. When you have that culture that you know it works, you can also like bring like-minded people with you. Like if you are the type who is very casual and likes to communicate a lot and to keep it very chill when talking with customers, like no official white collar meetings and stuff like that, look for people and clients that match that expectation, right? Because you can't go dressed, in smoking and very formally at like a college party. Right. So like, know your market, know your the type of client that you are looking for and the type of mentality that you basically click with. I feel like this helps a ton, especially going back to what I said earlier about technology and what we talked about. What I saw is most people, especially when starting out, especially if they are technical, focus too much on like, oh, we saw this great technical problem that we're going to fix and we're going to rule the world. It doesn't work like that because you can fix a very difficult technical problem that nobody cares about. Like you can, fix the NP issue like with algorithms, right? Okay, that's going to give you like a certain prestige in certain circles. But in real life, like nobody cares. Like I just said earlier, your client just wants to sell bottled milk. Doesn't care about P versus NP or stuff like this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and whilst we'll be speaking, and I'm glad what you just said there about the uniqueness. We're all different. There'll be people listening here that have their uniqueness that I personally have come across so many times that people have forgotten what they're unique at. They're letting the tech take over and they're losing their own persona of what no one can ever take away from them, which is themselves, what they're really good at, their strengths. You and I, we've spoken before on the importance of authority-based, founder-based marketing from that and standing out over and above what everybody else is. And one of those things is having the ability to see what strengths you have as an individual. Through the process of growing your company, how important do you believe authority-based, founder-led marketing is in today's world of growing a business?
It does make a very valid point for you to prove that, hey, I really know what I'm talking about. And like me as an individual, as a founder, here is what I did to prove this. And it also helps a lot when you talk about what you do, what your company does, to help people understand that, hey, this guy did this and this and this and this. So like he's not someone who's just talking stuff out, right? Because you can find a lot of people who can say all the nice things and can speak all the nice words. But when they are put in front of like acting out what they have to do, then they just disappear or like they don't know what to do and can actually end you up in a worse position than when you started, right? So like actually doing harm. So I feel like getting started with having a strong knowledge in your area of expertise and what you want to be an entrepreneur in helps a lot, especially because like if you want to be an entrepreneur in an area, then it means that you want to solve a problem, right? How can you solve a problem if you do not know the domain? Like I couldn't open up a new company in, car mechanics area, right? Because I don't know the first thing about cars. So I wouldn't have any authority on that because I don't have any experience. If any mechanic would come to ask me two questions, they would instantly know that I have no idea what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like just a bit of education on the part of the clients on when you are talking to someone, ask ChatGPT about two questions to ask a domain X expert, can help out a lot in weeding out the true authority figures from the posers. But mm-hmm. also for you as an entrepreneur, it helps a lot to understand that you can't really make a change, like a sustainable change in a domain without really understanding it, right? So you mm-hmm. can't like get started out in something that you don't know the first thing about.
Yeah, and I think it's like you just said there was, you know, being a change, you've got to be a kind of a change agent within that field. So no matter what field or niche that you want to be in, you've got to be that change agent. Otherwise, you will sound like everybody else. If you're going to do what everybody else does without changing, you're going to sound like everybody else. And if you sound like everybody else, then you just can't break free. This is when you can't drive your fees higher. You can't drive more profitability. You can't get the best people because you're just stuck where everyone else is. So that's a really, really good point of being that change agent there. Really great insight. So let's make a little shift. Let's take a little talk about challenges within your businesses. You know, growing a business is never easy. There's always going to be challenges in growing a business. What has been really sort of the top few challenges you've had in growing your business today? And what did you do to get past them?
Well, I think the top challenge is getting out your preconceptions about what the actual problems that you want to solve are. Because once you hit reality, you try to make it shape your beliefs, shape according to your beliefs. That's, if you aren't aware of that, that's a really hard thing to go by. And it can go against you. Like you want to help people, but because you bring your own solution and try to make it work to their problems without thinking that, hey, maybe I need a hammer here and I don't need a screwdriver, it can basically go against you, right? And kind of building onto this, I feel like, especially as tech people, you hear a problem and then you instantly think of solutions and you just want to spill them out instantly to like, okay, this is what you have to do. Yeah, 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 yeah. It doesn't work that way. Like once you hear the problem that you want to fix, you have to think of something that works like across the board, right? If you can find a solution that is like 80% matching to a ton of your prospective clients' issues, and then you can work around the rest of 20% with like custom, integrations or stuff like that, then I feel like this can help a lot. But you can't reach that with like an instant, okay, you have this problem, I got this solution, bam, it's done. It doesn't work that way. You have to think it through. And this takes time. Like we pivoted our product, I think, 2 or 3 times in the first 5 years because it didn't match what we thought the market would want, right? Something like that. And also, when you get into a certain market, think of what that market warrants, right? Most of our clients are MSPs, and what they appreciate is, for example, integrations with a ton of other products. So we had to take that in mind and rebuild our application, once we realized this, to be easily extendable, right? And this gets into like the technical part. Okay, you want this to be easily extendable. You want this to make it integratable with basically any software that you can, any tool that you can. How can you do that? Well, you have multiple options, but just pick the simplest one, which in our case, for example, was just building a REST API that we also use internally. So we don't have to maintain like 2 systems, especially with a small team. And that has been a huge boon for us. So understand what your market profile is, basically, because like I said, we, our main partners in the first years were and right now as well, are MSPs. You don't want to assume that MSPs, I don't know, like integration with social media, right? They want integration with other industrial systems that they might already use, or other system that they themselves built for their customers. So you have to always, like I said earlier, keep an open mind on what your market wants and how you can address those needs.
Yeah, really, really good points there. And talking about MSPs there, you know, and I know, well, before we do, you know, like I said, just as a recap on what you just said there, it really is understanding your ICP. Who is your ideal client? What is the profile? What is it they need? What is their ICP could also be ideal client problem. What is the problem that they are looking to solve all the time? And then making sure that you are, we talk about niches, and Marketing 101 says niche all the way down that you possibly can. But that's not necessarily true in tech. I think one of the best ways of doing it is to niche on a problem. What is the problem that you can solve? And then use that to be as your niche. So this, I am the world's best at solving this problem. And that's how you can start dragging people towards you. Because marketing isn't just about attracting people. It's about reflecting people that aren't right for you. And if you've got the right message and you've got the right niche, you understand the problem that's stopping them from getting their outcome. And that could be, like you say, a milk bottling company has a problem, wants to have an outcome, but it's a problem. It could be a house building company that wants a different outcome, but it's the same problem. You've got another one that has a problem. It's the same problem. So if you can come the world's best at that problem, that's when you actually can really start attracting your ISP and your ideal client.
And when you think in terms of problems, this also helps you a lot, because it means that you are actually solving a real issue and not just building up on a hype train. Like, for example, how we see now with every company becoming AI, or like we saw in the 2000s with every company becoming a .com, or a couple of years back with every company becoming blockchain, even though like those companies don't need those things. If you actually solve a real problem, then you separate yourself out from the hype train, right? If you call yourself AI because you are a word editing software company, right? And you have basically autocorrect, which is calls to ChatGPT, you're not AI. You don't need AI, right, to stand out. Look at all the competitors that you have. Look at all the potential clients that you have. Try to find something that nobody else does, because for sure there is something there, and focus on that and ignore all the like today's hype train, right? Try not to, for example, integrate AI just to say that, hey, we have AI. If it doesn't work, if it doesn't help, it's going to be useless and people are going to see through that. Just look at what is going on with Office right now, right? With they are integrating Copilot everywhere and people are like, no, leave me alone. I just want my email and my Word and my spreadsheets. That's all. I don't want any of this AI stuff, because it's not solving a real problem, right? It's just going on to the hype train. And as long as you can avoid that, you are on the right path.
Well, I think, Bogdan, if people want to take away anything from today's episode, it is solve a problem and stay off the hype train. That really is. It's very easy to look for the next shiny thing, that's going to glow. And to be fair, VCs are absolutely fantastic, but VCs are to a degree somewhat to blame, because they're the ones pushing most companies say, you need an AI element. So people are just jumping on this AI, whether they need it or not, and now forgetting what the problem they were solving in the first place, because they have to go and look chase this next shiny thing. And I think that's such a valid point to make. And if anyone's listening to this one, when it comes to this point, yes, AI is useful, but if it's not serving your main purpose, which is to solve the problem for your client, then perhaps it's not the main thing you should need to be focusing on, and doubling down on what does really make a difference to push that needle forward for you and your client. So exactly. We've come so far in such a short space of time. You've covered so much ground. So I've got a loaded question for you. I always tend to ask my guests one loaded question at the very end, and yours is going to be this one. You've grown your business from small, humble beginnings to, as I said, to some very successful. You got the partnership and acquisitions. Now you've grown to this massive level. quite frankly, quite a short space of time. If you could go back to young Bogdan when you first started as a founder and give yourself that one piece of advice that you would thought was the most important piece of advice for success, what would that be?
I think that would be to focus on one thing. Because especially when you're young, you feel the need to spread out, right? Before we started this company, I was also doing like freelancing work and working at NGOs and working in college and stuff like that. And I feel like we could have taken a lot of shortcuts and advanced a lot quicker if we were to focus on one thing. And that would have meant, for example, leaving the comfort zone more often and focusing up on stuff that maybe isn't that comfortable, like, I don't know, financing or business, more business talk, like deals and stuff like that. So not just the technical side or not just the marketing side or not just the business side, going around and spreading out. Because I feel like as a professional, as the more generalist that you are, like the more that you know about an entire area, not necessarily very deep knowledge, but very wide knowledge, the more helpful it can be. So like, if you know that, okay, I need this thing, but I don't know the exact thing, at least you know what kind of person you're looking for to help you out, right? Mm. So yeah, I think focus is a thing that can help a lot, especially when you're building a new business, especially in the first years.
Yeah, absolutely. Keeping focus, knowing what you want, what is the goal you're heading for, but don't be so dogmatic you're only choosing on one thing. Look what else you need to bring with you to get to that end result. Like you said, not just the tech, but the sales, the marketing, the leadership, all of those, bring those things together so that you can do have a truly great business at the end of it. Well, Bogdan, thank you very much for your time today. If people want to get hold of you or potentially work with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Well, I do have a Twitter account where I post from time to time, and I do also have a blog. I can leave you a link and put in the description.
Yeah, well, I'll pick that up from you a little bit later on, and then I'll make sure I put those in the show notes as well so that people can take that and get in touch with you. Well, Bogdan, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you for your time and the insights that you've given. You've dropped some really good bombs here, and I think people are going to get a lot out of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much as well.
That's great. Well, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for joining us for yet another episode of this Growth Focus podcast. And if you learned anything today or picked up anything or found anything interesting today, make sure you comment on it so that other people can pick that up as well. But more importantly, make sure you share. Please share episodes like this so that other people within our industry can learn from leaders like Bogdan and the others who have given up their time and insights for us all. So until next time, until the next episode, make sure you keep profitable. Make sure you keep pushing, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.